Welcome to the Udacity Thought Leader Series podcast. In this episode, Lalit Singh, COO of Udacity, and Nick Mehta, CEO of Gainsight, discuss how companies can become customer-centric through data.
Hi, welcome to Udacity Thought Webinar Series. I am Lalit Singh, COO of Udacity, and with me today is Nick Mehta, CEO of Gainsight. Nick has been a serial entrepreneur. He has moved from being in infrastructure space to security, and then later on he started a totally new category called customer success. Nick, I'm very excited for you to be here today.
Awesome to be here. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
How's your day been today?
It's been great. I mean, I get to hang out with you, so what could be better? But it's a lovely day in California. So
it's a privilege to be having a conversation with you. I have been a huge fan of you for what you have done. You know, creating a totally new category is something amazing. So let's talk about, why don't you share about what customer success really means, and
sure,
how did you actually go about moving from a totally different space, infrastructure or security, to customer success?
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, when I tell this story, I actually often go back to my childhood, because there's a funny kind of moment in my childhood that I still remember that kind of symbolizes the change in the way people think about business. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as you alluded to with the Steeler fan.
Yeah.
And my dad, when he was working, was an executive in technology. He worked at Digital Equipment, which maybe 5% of the audience remembers, but it was a big company back in the day.
I do remember Digital Equipment. Because it was acquired by Compaq.
And then HP.
HP, we acquired Compaq.
And you were at HP, so
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And so my dad was at Digital Equipment, and then he was the CEO of some small technology companies. And I grew up around technology. I had computers in my house. I was programming in my basement. Side note, I didn't have many friends, but I was definitely into technology. And with my dad and I would spend a lot of time together talking about business. And one of the things he said when I was a kid, I remember distinctly, there was a day we went to kind of a take your child to work day. I was probably, 8 or 9 years old. And there's a photo that we have of me with my dad all dressed up going to work. And it was really, those are fun moments. And I remember my dad saying, if you ever go into business, the only two things that matter in really creating value are building a product and selling it, right? And that's kind of the old model that both you and I are familiar with. That's where kind of a lot of companies operated. And back when your customer would pay you all their money up front, let's say it was for the HP servers or some kind of software, that really made sense because you build the product, you sell it, you move on to the next customer, right?
Yes.
And we wanted to care about customers back in that era and we wanted to treat them well, but it wasn't the first thing we thought of when we woke up in the morning. Right. The first thing was building the product and selling it. Well, I kind of experienced that environment myself. I worked in a large on-premise software company, Symantec, came in through a company called Veritas that they bought. Great companies, phenomenal. And all of our software was sold behind the firewall and people paid us up front. And I was a GM of a division and I was measured on bookings, right? How much could we sell? That was the whole thing. And then I got hired to run my first SaaS company, this company called LiveOffice.
Mm-hmm.
And LiveOffice was a company, it was a small company. We were doing cloud-based e-discovery. So when people got sued, we would let them be able to easily search all their emails for legal purposes. But the interesting thing about the business was it was a SaaS business, so people paid us either month by month or year by year. And when I came into this company, I had the old playbook as a CEO. I was thinking about sales and I was thinking about product. But very quickly, I figured out that in a SaaS business or a subscription business, any business where your customer pays you over time, the mindset shifts. It's not just about product and sales. You've got to focus on your customers as well. And I realized as a CEO, I was spending half my time on our existing customers. Are we going to be able to keep them? Are they happy? Are they using the new features? And I was looking at this business, and I was actually quite shocked that we had great systems to help us build software, to help us sell stuff. But we had no system to help us manage our customers, right? Mm-hmm. That was the big gap. So I ran this company, LiveOffice, eventually sold it. It was a great experience. And then I didn't found Gainsight. I met two founders who had this idea for this company. And I just fell, and the two founders really very ahead of their time. And I fell in love with this idea. And I joined very early in the days of Gainsight, about 6.5 years ago. And basically said, we want to change the way companies work. They still had to build great products. They still had to sell.
Yeah.
But they've got to make sure their customers are successful. And when people think of customer success, what they think of is, after that sale, what am I doing to make sure the customer got set up properly? that they're using the product well, right? Mm-hmm. They're in your business, yeah. that they're actually taking advantage of all the amazing learning that mm-hmm. you have to offer. You know, you might sell a big deal to a big company. Yeah. You guys have a great customer success team. You want to be proactive to make sure they're taking advantage of that platform. Because honestly, often what will happen in business relationships now is you'll get to the end of the contract and the client will say, why did we even buy this? Right? Maybe there's a different person that's in the seat now. The person you sold to isn't there. And yeah. if you're not driving customer success, you're not going to be able to keep those customers. You're not going to be able to grow them.
Yeah.
So customer success is a whole new discipline just alongside product development and sales. It's a new way of doing business.
New way of doing things. Yeah, I actually agree with you. It actually reminds me of my very, very first job after my undergrad. I joined GE Healthcare as a customer service lead, customer service engineer. And most of my time was actually spent with customers, and our customers were hospitals or
right.
polyclinics or the doctors over there. And as I reflect upon it, 80% of my time was really understanding the customer, what's going on over there, how
yeah.
they were using our equipment, and if any of our machine, CT scan or MRI fail, what psyche, what is it that
was the
going
sentiment? Yeah.
What was the sentiment over there and how I could be a partner with them? And then I saw that, you know, just being their partner helped us become their better partner, and then it helped us grow the business with them as well. But if I reflect upon it, it was very human-centric. It was very manual also.
You nailed
right?
it. Yeah.
So I would be curious to understand from 15, 20 years back, how this whole industry, how this whole area has evolved.
You're so right. Yeah. You know, it's not like people haven't tried to make their yeah. customers successful before. Yeah. We all have tried to.
Yeah.
But before, the only way we could do that is have somebody go to that office mm-hmm. and spend time with them and try to meet every person. Mm-hmm. And even then, even in that GE Healthcare, that hospital yeah. is pretty big.
Yeah.
You might not be able to meet every single person that's touching the system
true.
Or software. Yeah. And so the big change that's happened is now through technology, we can actually see more about what our customers are doing, right? So you can see in your business how your customers are consuming the learning content, where they're starting and stopping, where they're not completing courses, how many employees are completing their courses. You have so much data that if you were a traditional training business, you know, 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. you might meet your biggest customers and ask them, but you wouldn't see all that data. And so you have all this data. You also have other data, right? Your customers are opening your emails or they're not opening your emails. They're coming to your webinars, like watching
yeah.
this video.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You have data in your CRM. And mm-hmm. so one of the biggest changes that's happened is the data is there so that we don't have to guess anymore and mm-hmm. we don't have to go visit every single customer.
Yeah.
We can be proactive and watch them without having to figure out manually one by one. And an example yeah. of this is, you know, for a long time, people have sent surveys to customers. You know, you do it. Mm-hmm. We all should do it. We do it as well. But no matter what, with the survey, it's almost a little bit of a lagging indicator after the fact, how are they
yeah.
feeling?
Yeah.
And maybe 10, 20% of people respond to those surveys. Yeah. And so the question is, instead of asking your customers all the time how they're doing, can you actually see what they're doing
mm-hmm.
and anticipate their needs?
Yeah.
And that's why
yeah.
in customer success, you hear this word proactive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Can I, instead of being late to the game and learn about problems after
yeah.
they happen,
yeah.
can I actually anticipate the problem and mm-hmm. reach out to the customer before they even know they have a problem?
So I think that's a huge evolution, right, from reactive to proactive. Now, where do you see it? Where do you see the whole customer success ballgame moving over the next, let's say, 4 to 5 years?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. We've been doing this about 7 years now, and we do a big conference every year called
yeah.
Pulse. And every year we talk about what's the future of customer success. And since mm-hmm. it's 2019 this year, we talked about what we called CS 2020. So what's customer success look like in the next decade?
Mm-hmm.
And we basically talked about kind of, you know, 4 or 5 kind of big themes that are happening in this industry. So one of them is everything I've talked about so far, you could think of as trying to save your customers, right? Being a little defensive.
Mm-hmm.
How do I make sure they don't leave? That's where customer
yeah.
success started.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the real opportunity is if you do a great job, your customers are going to grow with you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to spend more money. They're going to buy more seats. They're going to buy more
yeah.
products from you. They're going to be a bigger advocate. So the first thing is moving from customer success
mm-hmm.
to customer growth.
Yes.
So how do you grow? Customer growth is a good term because mm-hmm. it means your customer is growing in the value they're getting from you, and you're growing with your customer because you're actually driving more revenue from that customer. So that's
mm-hmm.
like one big thing. It's not an alternative to sales. It's
mm-hmm.
part of sales, right? So that's a really interesting kind of
mm-hmm.
concept. The second one is this idea that it's not just about getting your customer to use your product. It's actually about making sure they get to the business outcome they're looking for,
yeah.
right? So at the end of the day, you know, in your business, people want their employees to learn, And that's for a reason, because maybe they want to build new products, or maybe they want their employees to be more satisfied. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different outcomes they might want. Yeah. And so really getting an orientation on what's the actual client's goal. We call that operationalizing outcomes, meaning mm-hmm. how can I have a machine that in the sales process, I'm capturing what are those goals the client has.
Yeah.
In the onboarding, I'm setting them up around those goals. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I'm checking, are we achieving your goals or not? And that helps facilitate a commercial conversation, because mm-hmm. if I've driven all this value for you, then I should get some more money, right?
Yeah.
So that's the second concept of operationalizing outcomes in your business, really thinking about that sort of outcome. Third concept that's a really interesting idea is, and we'll talk probably more about this later, is that it's not just about the data. Sometimes with the data, you can lose sight of the human being, right? So on the other side of that business, there's, in your case, you know, people running teams, engineering teams, learning teams. There's individuals trying to achieve their learning. And you have your own team as well working with those people. You have a customer success team. Mm-hmm. So we call this third idea human first leadership. Mm-hmm. Not forgetting that there's a human being on the other side of that, and really thinking about what are their goals? What are their outcomes? Both your team as well as your customers as well. Really, really thinking through that concept of, we call it human first leadership. And then the fourth concept that's a big one that we see is it's not just about throwing people at these problems. Mm-hmm. It's about then bringing those insights back into the product development process, right? Yeah. So the people that are touching your customers are one of your greatest sources of wisdom for your customer strategy overall. And it shouldn't just be about throwing people at it. It's about then bringing the insight into your product and building better products. So really focusing on the experience in the product, not just the experience through your team. Yeah. Last concept that's the fifth one that we see people doing is then really getting a handle on all the data that makes this possible. We talked about this before.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a big change. Yeah. A lot of companies out there, you'll go to them, they'll say, yeah, our data's a mess. You know, I know you've dealt with that in the past.
Exactly.
Our data's a mess. But then they almost say it in a disempowered way, like, we can't do anything about it. But I guarantee you, 5 years from now, companies that have data as an advantage are going to be far more successful. So really making data an advantage. Those are the five things that we think about.
So let's talk about the last three. I'm really intrigued. You grew up as a technology kid, as you said earlier as well. But then as you're leading Gainsight, and more I'm seeing is it's really all about human, right? That
was
your third big area that you talked about. So it seems like human connection is going to be one of the critical success factor.
That's right.
Is that true? So can you expand a little bit more as to how you're using the technology platform, the data, to really drive much more meaningful human interactions, if you will?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if you zoom out a little bit, like kind of go to the highest level, we're in an interesting point in our society, right? Mm-hmm. There's all this great data. There's all this artificial intelligence. And it can feel like maybe the human being part of business is less relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd argue that what we all want is the technology and AI to help us be more effective as human beings with our customers, right? Yeah. And with our employees and all that. And so there needs to be that human element. I think we're seeing it. Just the pure machine approach isn't enough. There's got to be sort of the human racing with the machine, as some people say together, right?
I mean, at the end, we all are human beings. We're not yet robots.
That's right, exactly. Maybe one day we will be.
We will be.
I'm excited about the singularity as much as the next guy. But for now, we need to actually recognize that human piece. And I think it shows up in a few ways.
Yeah.
First, actually, very passionate for me, it shows up actually with our employees, right? So you're a great leader. You think about this a ton. I know you're very compassionate. And it's about really saying, look, the employees aren't assets. Like some people say, our employees are our greatest assets. They're not assets, right? It's not just about the bottom line. These people are human beings. And how do we actually have a more human relationship with our team? And I think modern cultures are embracing that concept a lot more than maybe 10, 15 years ago. And I know you're driving that here in your company. So that's like one lens on it. And another lens then is saying, okay, that customer, there is a human side to this. And you can relate to this because you've dealt with a lot of clients.
Yeah.
And one of the things that can happen in clients is you lose sight of the people, right? You think of this client as one entity. You worked at a great company, HP.
Yeah.
That's not one entity. There's lots of people
inside there.
Yeah. And some of them might be advocates for you, and some of them may not be. Mm-hmm. And some of them have goals. And by the way, all of them want to get promoted or be happier in their job. And so there's an approach to customer success, which is recognizing that. Almost like mapping out, visually, who is our relationship and who are the people that are really excited about this? What are their goals at each individual's level? Obviously, what's their sentiment towards our company? Mm-hmm. Really having a people-oriented approach to customer success. So in our product, we do a lot of things to help our customers understand the health of their customers, a health score for their customer and all that. But we're now now pushing people to say, not just the health of your customer, what's the health of each individual relationship in that customer, you know? Yeah. And each of those, and you can all go eventually go all the way down to the health of individual students or learners, right, in your business, right? Yeah. Or at least the stakeholders you deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at Udacity, we are all about student first. That's one of the key
focus areas for us. Yeah.
And what that translates into, be it any student who directly comes to our website, many of them are first-time job seekers.
Right.
And some of them are looking to get to the next best job for themselves. And our philosophy, ourself, is that we want to provide the best experience to the end learner, be it a consumer coming directly to our platform or the employees where we are actually helping retrain or reskill them in alignment with the mission of the company. And what we are seeing is when we, our customer success team, which by the way, thank you, we are now Gainsight enabled.
Thank you, appreciate that.
Yeah. So our customer success team, their mission in life is to ensure that we provide the best in class experience to those students, to those employees over there. And then they are making the right progress in their transformation to become from a programmer to become a machine learning engineer or to become a data scientist. And as a result, what we are seeing is the retention rate of those employees in the companies is amazing.
At your customers.
At our customers.
Yeah, which
at
is
our customers
great.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
And the impact that they are driving in the strategic direction of those companies are significantly higher than the other employees who have not gone through the Udacity nano-degree program.
That's amazing. And I, you know, one thing I'll kind of echo on that is I think there's such a virtuous cycle that you're describing here, right? So you talked about your employees working with your customers, driving the student success, which drives them to be more engaged, right?
Yeah.
And then the converse is also true, I think, which is you probably know there's this very tight correlation between employee happiness and customer happiness, right? One side of it is, one causality is, if your employees are happier, like your team, then they're going to be better with your customers and your customers. That's well researched.
Yeah.
But I'd argue the opposite's true too. If your customers are happier and if your employees feel a sense of purpose about what they're doing with your customers, which you have an amazing purpose, like you guys are helping economic mobility and you're helping companies transform. And if you're,
hopefully we'll help drive the GDP up.
Yeah, seriously. Like you're going to help companies and societies like evolve. If you can help your customers, then your employees are happier. I'm sure your employees get so much satisfaction knowing they have a real impact, right?
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I think that's an important thing for everyone. You know, we used to think of our employees kind of, you know, just their resources and it doesn't matter. They're just going to do the job. They're empowered now. We need to show them the impact they're having on our customers, on our society. It's really important.
So let's move to the next topic. You also spoke about how customer success actually helps better product management.
Right.
So expand a little bit more about that.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you, both of us worked in like large enterprise company. You worked at a really big company. I worked at a pretty big company. And I think back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I started my career, I guess, you know, maybe coming up on 20 years ago in product management. And I was a product manager. I joined this company, Veritas, which is a great company. And it builds backup software, which, by the way, like, to the average person, they probably don't wake up and think about, you know, their Starbucks and their backup software. But, you know, it's important. But it definitely is not like the sexiest area in the world. And I got into this job. I was a product manager. And I wasn't even cool enough to be the product manager for the backup software. I was the product manager for the reporting module for the backup software. It's very, very back office stuff. But I remember back then how you built products. And it was pretty simple. You know, if you had an enterprise-oriented business, this will probably resonate with you. You're a product manager. There were a few things you did. One thing was, where are the deals? What are the largest deals? And what features do I need to build to win those deals, right? From the sales team, which is great. That's very important. And then the second thing you might do is, what does Gartner think? Or maybe another analyst think, right? Those are the two kind of big lenses that a PM would spend their time thinking about. The world has changed so much, right? That was in a world where software and products were sold top down, where the user didn't matter much. It was really just about the analyst, the CIO, the end purchaser, the salesperson. And the world's changed so much. Now, if you're a product manager, you got to think about your whole world differently. There's so many insights. First of all, you can be looking at what your users do in the product. I'm sure your team does this all the time. Analytics happening in there. You can be guiding your users to do the right things. You can onboard them in the product. You can show them new features. And you can be collaborating with your customer success team because they actually have all these insights from your customers about what's resonating, where the gaps are, what the features they need, which areas aren't really driving outcomes. You know, because a product manager can look at a dashboard of what's being used, but they don't really know what the business value is. And actually, a good example of this is sometimes there could be a feature that's used a lot, but it's being used a lot because the product's not intuitive and it's very manual to do something. So you as a product manager could say, yay, my feature's getting used a lot. And the customer's like, gosh, darn it, I have to do this thing over and over again.
Over and over again.
Right? And so there's a lot of wisdom that can come from the people talking to the customers directly, which is often customer success, partnering with the product management team to really drive to better customer outcomes.
Yeah. So basically what you are suggesting is we are solving the product development / designer blindfolds.
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, it reminds me of my GE days and something we do out here at Udacity as well. You know, when I was a customer service engineer, one day I just got very frustrated and I flew to Bangalore. That's where our product development and design team is. And I gave them download of all the different things that they do wrong in designing the product. And by the end of the day, they actually ended up giving me an offer to come join the product development and design team.
That's amazing. Wow.
So the first thing that I did was I sent some of those team members just for next 1 to 2 weeks to go and spend time in the hospitals and see and observe how the doctors or the hospital staff is using, misusing, or abusing our systems.
Yeah.
Just take notes.
Totally.
And that then just totally changed their perspective around the design methodologies and how they should be actually developing the product.
I love that. That customer centricity that you were driving is so important.
Yeah. We do similar out here at Udacity since we have millions of students who have actually gone through our platform. We spend time with them to take the feedback as to what their experience has been in the classroom, our mentors that support them and how they can improve. But on the other side, we also talk to them, specifically on the enterprise side, what are the new skills? What are the new technical disruptions that you guys are going to work on? And then how we can actually start working on the right content or
that
training
is cool.
program.
That's awesome.
To help you through your next 3 to 5 year transformation journey. So I'm totally with you. I mean, intersection of this customer success and the product team and the design team is going to be very key.
And I think one thing that's important to emphasize is just, you know, like you said, you were doing this at GE Healthcare, and a lot of the concepts aren't new, right? Mm-hmm. The core things aren't new, but the two things that are new are, number one, you now have the data and technology to do this in a scalable way, right? So maybe you did that, you flew to India, that's an amazing story. Not everyone was doing that, and therefore you can do that all the time. Yeah. But number one, you know, through technology, product managers can see what their customers are doing, CS people can reach more customers, there's just a lot more scale.
Yeah.
And then number two, it's more existential now. You know, at GE Healthcare, I'm guessing that those hospitals, at the end of the day, were kind of stuck with what they bought for quite a long period of time, right? Yeah. They bought it. And now the pace of change, the ability to change with SaaS and cloud and the internet, it's like it's existential. If you are not customer centric, you are going to die as a business.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I think then let's talk about data, the last point you spoke about. Talk to me about now what kind of data come into a customer success platform and how does that enable a service provider to actually provide better service, and how does it also help the customer?
That's a great, all great questions.
Yeah.
One way I like to think about it, because every company's data is a little different, is to think about kind of two core concepts. So when we think about customer success, and you think about that, you know, customer success is I want to get my customers to be able to get value so they stay with me and they grow. We think of two ingredients, and you can think of almost like a formula. So CS, customer success, equals two things together. CO, the customer's outcomes, we talked about this before, plus CX, their experience, right? So if I'm in a business relationship, I want to get a good outcome and I want to have a good experience. And so you can think about what are the data points that point to those two questions, right? So on the outcome side, there's lots of things you can think about. You know, their adoption of our product, how are they using it? How well are they using it? How does it compare to other people? What's the business value they're getting? Is it causing their employees to be retained longer? Is it driving sales up for them, et cetera? All those kind of questions, and you can track a lot of that, right? And you have some of that's in your product. Some of that might come out of conversations with the customer. You can survey them. That's all about the business outcome. And ideally, that ties to the goals why they bought. Mm-hmm. So when they bought, they had a goal, yes. and hopefully that's tying to that. The second chunk is then the experience, right? That experience is all the big things and the little things, mm-hmm. right? So of course you can ask them how they feel, the survey kind of concept. Yeah. You don't get everyone responding, but it's still a useful signal. Mm-hmm. But you can see how many issues they ran into, mm-hmm. right? How many problems, how many times they had to call your support team, right? right? You know, how many issues they had with your onboarding process, you know, mm-hmm. maybe technical problems they found, bugs that they identified, right? But even little things, like maybe they had an experience with your billing department. Like, mm-hmm. that, it's an interesting thing. Like, I always bring up billing as an example. You can win the customer in the product and customer success and sales and then lose them through the billing process.
Through the billing
right?
process.
Like, yeah. through bad invoicing yeah. or like feeling like it's really frustrating dealing with your finance team mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. I didn't have a good experience at your event. Yeah. And so what you want to do is really measure that outcome and that mm-hmm. experience. Think about all the data you can bring to bear, and that's a framework we like to use.
That's amazing. I'm going to switch gears now yeah. and we'll talk about culture.
Yeah.
So I have been very inspired by the culture that you have built in your company in Gainsight. So talk to me a little bit more about what did you do about building the amazing culture at Gainsight?
Well, it's interesting. So we definitely always think of it as a work in progress. So we don't think of it. It is definitely a great culture, yeah. but we know we can continue to get better, just like I'm sure you work on yours.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think it starts with is the why of the culture, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think some companies, and it's totally fine if you do this, but some companies, we just want to make money and the culture is just a means to an end, right? So maybe I kind of joke that these are the entrepreneurs that are Googling like how to create a good culture. You know, they're like kind of looking it up because their board member told them to create a culture, right? For us at Gainsight, the culture is actually the why, right? Mm-hmm. So we certainly want to make money and have a good business. Those are very important. But like, we want to actually enjoy our lives and feel like some meaning in what we do. And so we wrote up a purpose statement for our company that was a little different. So many companies' purpose statement is about what they do. Our purpose statement is about how we do what we do. It's specifically, we want to be living proof that you can win in business while being human first. Mm-hmm. So we want to live a human first culture that we never forget that the people in our company and in our community and in our customers, our employees' families and at our customers are all human beings. Mm-hmm. And we always want to think about that, like in every little way. For example, when an employee leaves, you know, some companies, it's terrible. They treat them like they're dead to the company. They walk them out the door. Mm-hmm. They just, it's a horrible ending to an otherwise good experience. And, you know, we celebrate our employees when they're leaving. When somebody calls me to say they're leaving, the first thing I say is thank you for everything you've done. And the second mm-hmm. thing is congratulations, because mm-hmm. I'm excited because you're probably going off to something. And third is I'd love to learn, you know, from you about how did this experience go? What can we do better, right?
Yeah.
Some people make people feel bad when they're leaving. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible thing, right? Another example is, how can you always really think about the people around your employees? So you're their families, their partners, their friends, and obviously give them that freedom mm-hmm. to take advantage of everything outside of their life. And this comes down to the things like work-life balance and working from anywhere and all the things that I think everyone aspires to, but we think a lot about that. We even sometimes survey our employees' families to say, how do they feel about Gainsight?
That's
an awesome example, right? Yeah. We think even about our competitors. Like we mm-hmm. have competitors and they're, you know, we don't think of them as like mm-hmm. bad people. They're not. They're like mm-hmm. actually just people like us trying to, you know, feed their families and have a good life and be happy. And so just not really like taking anyone, turning them into an entity. They're mm-hmm. human beings. And so that human first concept ended up being a big part of our kind of reason for existence in our company. And then it turned into five values, which we can go through, but they're things like golden rule, treat people the way you'd want to be treated, you know, success for all. We want a business that's going to drive success for our customers, our employees, our investors, not just the investors. And a value a lot of people like called childlike joy. So bring the kid in you to work every day. We want to run our business like just like that freedom. You know, we both have kids and you see them playing, and that it's like we lose that as adults. It's very sad. How do we bring some small amount of that back to the workplace?
Are there any things that you have learned over the time that did not work, that you tried did not work, so that we can, or anybody who's listening, actually they can?
Thousands of things. Oh my God. Yeah, that list is much longer than the ones that worked. So I'll tell you, like I give you a couple examples. One of them is taking somebody else's ideas and just trying to implement them without thinking about how they fit for you, mm-hmm. right? So people work at your company based on who you are. And mm-hmm. you know, if you're a leader, you can't just be somebody else. And so I read a great business book. It's probably one of the best business books ever written, called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz, who he used to work with.
Yes.
And you know, he's an amazing leader. And it's a great book. And it's interesting because I think his style, I've never met him, but I think his style is very different than mine mm-hmm. from reading the book. And I think in the book he talks about, you know, when you have a tough situation, you should be really, really candid with your team mm-hmm. and don't sugarcoat it. And you should, you know, it's okay if they feel bad because you all be yeah. through it together, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for him that really worked. I mean, it's very obvious yeah. it worked. And I remember I'm a very positive person. You can probably tell that. And I, you know, that's how I've always run the company. And I remember one all hands, I'd just read the book and I went into the all hands meeting, you know, kind of a company meeting.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know, things aren't as good as we thought. And here's the brutal truth and whatever. And everyone just felt terrible after that all hands. And it didn't actually do anything for anyone because that's not who I am, you know. Now, should yeah. I be candid? For sure. The next yeah. all hands I found, okay, there's a blend. Mm-hmm. I can take that concept and make it my own in my own style, right? So I think the first thing I've learned is taking an idea and just applying it
yeah.
without thinking about personalizing is a bad idea.
Yeah, how what would the implications be in your company? Because the culture may be very different, and if you just apply a different That's idea without thinking about it.
Without
that.
Thinking about who you are. Yeah. And you, yeah, this exactly. your company here is different yeah. than when you were at HP.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So the second concept I've learned is you know, obviously in our culture, we care a lot about people and we care a lot about treating the way we'd want to be treated. That's the golden rule. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't push your people to be the mm-hmm. best version of themselves. And my yeah. COO, Allison Pickens, actually is really great at driving this. She's talked about how one of the most compassionate things you can do for people mm-hmm. is actually help them be as great as they can be. So being a good person to somebody else doesn't mean always doing exactly what they ask or just doing everything for them. Sometimes it means pushing them to be great, right? And that, by the way, that counts to your customers too. It's yeah. customer success isn't just do whatever your customers ask for.
Yeah.
It's helping them really get the most out of what you're doing. Sometimes pushing them to do things they might not naturally do. Same thing is true with our team. And I'm really trying to do that now more, is help our team be the best version of themselves they can be.
Yeah. So let's talk about employee. I mean, this is amazing conversation. So all of that, the intention is to keep the employees happy, to keep them motivated, to keep them productive, and give them a really amazing experience, right? Professionally as well as personally. So any other thoughts around how to keep the employees motivated or how do you guys do it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think there's so many little yeah. things too that yeah. matter. You know, these are all very high level yeah. ideas. Let me just yeah. throw like a random list yeah. of little ideas.
Yeah.
I think especially as you get bigger, mm-hmm. so we're about 700 people, you guys are, you know, several hundred people as well.
Yeah.
So I think that, The public acknowledgement is great, and mm-hmm. everyone does it. You know, we have a, hey, congratulations on your yeah. promotion or whatever. I think in this world of social media, the thing that's become even more important now is the private acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. So the email one-on-one to that engineer, I just sent some this morning, mm-hmm. that did a great job on something. The phone call to somebody mm-hmm. about thanks for your work with that customer, right? That is something that actually is much more powerful now. Because mm-hmm. I think in the social media world, the public acknowledgement has lost a little bit of its luster, you know, yeah. with the Facebook birthdays where it's like, yeah. get 1,000 people saying happy birthday. They don't even know you and they say happy
exactly.
birthday, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that like, individual acknowledgement is a way to really think about helping people kind of be motivated. And I think another thing is, of course, really thinking about if you're a leader, how you can kind of show up with your individual team members as being very open to feedback, right? Now that's a very simple thing to say and hard to do, but I try to do roundtables and one-on-ones, and I genuinely just want to hear what they have to say. And one thing I like to say is everyone's feedback is right. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to do all their feedback. It doesn't mean it's globally right. But yeah. from their perspective, it's right. If they don't like their manager, don't like the job, or not happy with something, they are right. And so really making people feel like their feedback is right. It may not be globally right, mm-hmm. but for them it's right so that they can open up to you and they can kind of feel that feeling. And then the third concept, something we really try to practice at Gainsight, is that this Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, wrote this yes. book called The Alliance. Mm-hmm. And The Alliance is about this idea the company shouldn't think of it as an employer and employee. It's more of a partnership. You know, mm-hmm. the company is trying to get some things in terms of, you know, business mm-hmm. goals and so on. And the employee is trying to get some things in terms of, you know, career growth or satisfaction. And you should constantly revisit that and be willing to talk about that openly. So it's okay if an employee comes to me and says, Nick, I'm not sure if Gainsight's the right place. I actually just had a lunch with one of our teammates who said, you know, I wonder whether like a year from now I should be doing something different because I could, you know, move into a different yes. area. And I introduced her to a bunch of people. Not that I wanted to leave the company, but I wanted to really know the different alternatives out there so that she can make the best decision for her career. That might be a little counterintuitive, but I actually think if you approach this kind of company relationship as an alliance, I think it really makes for a healthier company.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. You know, I usually have a lot of those conversations as well, that what should I be doing 6 months down the line or 12 months down the line? And I think as a leader, if we help employees think through that, what the path to 1 year down, 2 year down looks like, you would see much more amazing results from them, much more motivation, much more in what they are doing currently.
And it's kind of your mission of your company, right? Because you're helping people through their own kind of learning path in their careers and stuff. Yeah. So
we help transform anybody from A to B. That could be, we can transform a programmer to a machine learning engineer or a self-driving car engineer, and that's what we pride upon. So similar, we should be doing internally.
One of our team members left, a great VP, and she's starting a company, and that's awesome, right? That makes me so happy. Another one left to join her family business. Like, these aren't points of disappointment. Obviously, we're disappointed we don't get to work with them anymore. Mm-hmm. But I'm so proud of, like, the people that are alumni as well as the people inside Gainsight.
So I read your recent op-ed, and in that, you said that as a CEO, one of the important thing that you care about is asking the question that, are you giving everything that your employees need?
Right.
Can you expand a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. I think that it kind of goes back to this alliance concept.
Yeah.
You need a lot from your employees if you're a leader. I need a lot from my team. Yeah. I really do. I need them to give me their heart and their work and their mind and everything, right? And I really appreciate that they do that.
Yeah.
And they need a lot from me too. And I think that sometimes management isn't self-critical enough about themselves. Mm-hmm. I think especially in like modern society, management, you know, we get paid a lot of money. We have a lot of like a lot of upside. And I kind of believe in that expression, to those who much is given, much is expected, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, lots of times we'll say, gosh, these, you know, people in the company aren't doing the right things. And then sometimes I always wonder to myself, am I doing the right things to like give them the guidance or the support, you know, the nurturing? And you know, sometimes when an employee is failing in doing their job, I also wonder, well, how am I failing in actually either putting them in the wrong job or not giving them the right training to make them successful at the job? And I think there's just so much that leaders can do. And I feel like, especially in modern society, when we get so much, we should be doing a lot more for our teams.
Awesome. So let me ask you a personal question.
Yeah.
If you were not running Gainsight or not leading the customer success, what would you be doing?
So there's a few answers. So originally the answer was, I'm a huge football fan, Pittsburgh Steelers. So being a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, my lack of athletic ability whatsoever would probably exclude me from that. I'm the clumsiest person you'd meet.
Could be a coach.
I could be a coach, maybe, but then as actually, interestingly enough, outside of work, we've had a great discussion here. The other thing I'm actually really into is philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's this element of business that's about just thinking deeply about the underlying issues in a business and like what a business is and why it exists. And so I'm really into philosophy, some kind of crazy philosophy stuff, like, for example, what is our consciousness? Like when we think of ourselves, like what is that thing that we are thinking about? And I know you do a lot of meditation and things like that, so you probably think about things like this as well. So philosophy is probably the area I'd do if I wasn't in business.
So let me ask you then, what would be your some guidance to our audience who are listening to the webinar today?
Just in general?
In general, about their future or,
I mean, so general guidance is obviously hard to give in a broad sense, but I would say that.
So let me say, as they are thinking about transforming their careers, because our users are really thinking about transforming their careers.
Well, one thing I think to think about is, as you know very well, the pace of change in business is so rapid that you really have to shoot for where things will be a few years from now. There's an expression, famous expression in sports of like, you need to skate to where the puck's going to be.
Where the puck is going to be.
Not where it is. I think Wayne Gretzky said it, a hockey player. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, you have to understand where things are going to be. So I think there's a good example if you look at the programming world, right? The rate of change in programming is so much, right? Like, you know, you and I both remember the days where Java was a really, really big deal. And Java's still very important in big enterprises. But the new applications, a lot of them are being built in JavaScript and things like that. And even those JavaScript frameworks are changing so much, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the dangers is to set your sights on something that is popular now, but then by the time you are ready to go do it, the world's changed. Now, the second corollary to that is, I think being one of the biggest skills is being good at change. Mm-hmm. I do think that some of the people I see successful in my company and maybe yours as well are actually the core skill they have is being good at change. Yeah. Being good at learning, being good at, like, one of our other values is what we call beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. It's actually, the word for it is Shoshin, which means beginner. And it's the idea that, like, I'm okay being a beginner. You know, like, I, you know, as you probably know, in CEOs, there's lots of very experienced CEOs, but there are lots of first-time, very young CEOs. I had lunch with a young CEO just 2 days ago, and I learned so much from him. And I was like, this is, that's great. Like, it's not like you just keep doing something forever and you just get better. It's like you're always a beginner because the job of being a CEO is changing a lot.
Yes.
Right? The job of being a developer is changing a lot.
Right.
And so having that beginner's mind and feeling okay that I'm actually going to be a rookie and I'm learning from the beginning, and that's great.
I think that's an awesome guidance. This is exactly where, why we exist, because it's a lifelong learning.
Yeah.
Every 2 years, 3 years, we come to that crossroad wherein whatever skills we have suddenly become obsolete because the rate of technology change is amazing these days. It's just unprecedented.
Yeah.
And if we do not upskill ourselves, be it in the technical field or be it in the professional field, as you said, the job of a CEO actually changes every few years.
That's
as
right.
Well, right?
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the discussion we had today. Nick, thank you for joining us for the webinar.
This is wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.